Welcome to the RSP Cast, episode number 74. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. I want to give a special shout out to Rick Goreski and Milwaukee Arma, thanking them for just a fantastic couple of days with them in Milwaukee, and then also at Lambeau Field up in Green Bay, getting a chance to tour that in the Packers Hall of Fame. Had an awesome time, and it was fun to present to your group and to talk about the ins and outs of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio publication. This week's podcast, well, listen, we're going to continue our mini-series with Dwayne McFarland, the RSP contributor and new footballguys.com analyst. Dwayne and I have been looking over projections for offenses for the 2019 season, and we continue this mini-series with an hour-long look at the Green Bay Packers. So that's where we're going to start next week. Stay tuned for a podcast during the 4th of July week, where Dwayne and I already recorded one of the Indianapolis Colts. So the Packers and the Colts are the next two up. Thanks again for listening. We've really enjoyed the feedback we've gotten so far.
Okay. What is it about them this year that you find intriguing in terms of their offense and some of the changes that are going down?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the biggest thing obviously is that we've got a new coach. Mike McCarthy is a guy that had grown, you know, less and less, you know, favorable with the fan base and, you know, I guess the analytics community, a lot of different folks over the last 3 years. So now they're moving to Matt LaFleur, who last year was actually the offensive coordinator for the Titans. But really the thing that people need to know the most about Matt LaFleur is, you know, most of his roots are really in the Shanahan scheme. Now he did spend some time with Sean McVay as well. But if you look at Sean McVay, you know, what are his roots in? You know, Sean McVay picked up, you know, all of his, basically most of his run scheme stuff all comes from Kyle Shanahan, and he actually spent time with Gary Kubiak as well. So, I mean, those components are there, but then, you know, McVay also picked up the 11 personnel that he likes to run a lot by spending time with Jay Gruden. So Matt LaFleur is very similar. You know, most of his time has been either with Kubiak, Mike Shanahan, or Kyle Shanahan, mostly with Kyle Shanahan. So I'm excited about the running game. Because that's something that, you know, is a bit of a staple of, you know, that offense. I'm also excited to, you know, see Aaron Rodgers utilized in the ways that that offense, you know, tries to maximize quarterbacks that have the ability to move around a little bit. I think Aaron Rodgers is still, when healthy, he's elite in that area. So when you think about all the boot actions and a lot of the misdirection stuff that they do, you know, the ability that Aaron Rodgers is going to bring to the table there, I'm super excited about. So I think the other thing that Aaron Rodgers is going to get is, you know, he's going to now, I don't know that he's really had a really well-schemed ground game to help accent what he does. You know, so now that defenses are going to have to consider that more, and the explosiveness potentially of running plays, especially with a guy like Aaron Jones. I'm sure we'll talk about him some more in a minute. I'm just excited to see what this does for a guy like Aaron Rodgers. I mean, if you think about Mike Shanahan, you know, in Denver and what it did for the end of John Elway's career, and not that Aaron Rodgers needs anybody to prop him up. You know, people know that Aaron Rodgers is a great quarterback. The one thing that's kind of popped up here recently, and, you know, I'll kind of pitch it back to you. I wonder what your thoughts are on this. You know, it sounds like Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur are going to have to work out some differences, though. Aaron Rodgers wants to have more freedom at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, this is an offense that doesn't, it's not that it doesn't give any of that, but it's within structure, right? There's a lot more structure around what the pre-snap reads are. It's not that you can't check from a run to a pass, but there's a system within a system that says, okay, when you see these things, this is what you check to. Versus, well, I'm the quarterback and I might just totally check out over to this other thing. There's less of that. And so there's been some news recently, both from Aaron Rodgers and LaFleur. I actually, when I read the whole article on what each of them said, I feel like they're going to find a spot in the middle ground. But honestly, I'm hoping that Aaron Rodgers sees what, you know, LaFleur is talking about, because I think he could ultimately help him. So I don't know what your thoughts are there. Aaron Rodgers had a ton of freedom at the line of scrimmage over the past 5 years. In fact, right, he's on the record as saying he just didn't listen to Mike McCarthy and did what he wanted. Well, the results haven't been that good, Aaron. So maybe you should think about letting, you know, someone come in and actually help you be better.
Yeah, because that's kind of what Jay Cutler had to do in Chicago early in his career, was basically shake off what was put at the line, you know, what was called at the sideline. And you could, and he was doing that, I remember, on Sunday Night Football, and in fashion that was, you know, far more inflammatory to be able to say on air. But when you look at that whole Rodgers, LaFleur dynamic, I think you're right that they will find the middle ground. It's about trust. I mean, again, you have a new manager coming into an organization with a lead, a team leader. And that team leader is also a manager. So you have, you know, the higher end manager button heads with the floor manager. And basically what's going to happen is that floor manager in Aaron Rodgers is worried about losing the ability to make game changing plays because of his expertise and what he sees. And when he sees this, you know, much more defined process, he's worried that his ability to make quick changes that are going to really make a difference are going to be lost. And he may not have seen the numbers or the data enough to see that these changes he's talking about may amount to 5 plays in the entire year that may have really had that kind of impact that he's looking for. But then there's also how much weight do you give those 5 plays? Because they could have enough impact that it changes how the defense looks at things. But in the same token, LaFleur, you know, may be able to honor that and say, okay, Aaron, yeah, you have to, I understand that there are certain situations that maybe we should allow you to recognize and go through. And that comes through discussion, you know, conversation with each other, you know, between weeks, during, you know, halftime, during, you know, on the sideline at certain moments. And we both have to be open to that a little bit. But at the same time, I'm going to need you to understand that when I say that I'm open to this, that it doesn't mean that you can dump this aside like you did with Mike McCarthy. I'm not Mike McCarthy. My scheme is going to work. You know, I need you to trust that my scheme is going to work better and that this is going to help the team more to have a structured language of what we're talking about so that we can work together to make this happen and that you aren't the savior of the team, even though, you know, every commentator, every talking head is going to look at you that way because that's how they look at quarterbacks. So we've got to find a balance there. And I agree with you. I think they will. But my biggest concern would be, you know, I've joked, you know, I did this little joke thing on Twitter several weeks ago about, you know, Game of Thrones characters linked to quarterbacks. And I listed Aaron Rodgers as Cersei. And, you know, a lot of people loved that. I'm thankful that I made it in and out of Green Bay alive last week from my presentation without anyone ever knowing that. But I will say,
it's like, you know, it's the backdoor schemer.
Yes. And he is. He's kind of the, but at the same time, Cersei, if you think about her, she was a, I'm going to tell you my plans if I need to. I'll tell you exactly what I'm going to do to you. I'm going to tell you that I don't like you, that I don't want this to happen, or I'm going to do something to you. And it's going to happen. I'm going to figure out a way to do it by any means necessary. And Roger seems to be that way to a fault. But we also have to understand too that the system was broken and he was basically at a point where he had to defy the system in order to make it work. So of course there's going to be media questions about how workable he is with other people in the same way that that question was asked of Ben Roethlisberger a few years ago when he was paired with new offensive coordinators and Todd Haley. Yeah. So you're going to have to, I think there will be some work through that. And I think that they'll come to an understanding, but it will have some heated moments that, you know, people and, you know, maybe people don't have in the public eye on a regular basis, but does happen in operations environments a little more often than we publicize. So I'm good with that. I think the next thing I'd like to talk with you about though, is that running game, because the biggest worry for me is how often is Aaron Rodgers going to check out of run plays that could have actually worked and set things up well for a pass play that doesn't work. And then you get this team ends up never being able to establish what it wants to do in the running game to set up its game plan. But besides that lingering question, you know, I'm excited also for Aaron Jones because, you know, you look at him and you can see that he kind of has that Devonta Freeman kind of style to his game. He's shifty. He's very quick. He's someone that can work off of contact and create, and he's going to get you into that second and third level of the defense, hitting a hole well. And he is a very talented pass catcher. I would say that honestly, from maybe not from a route running perspective, because you know I haven't studied the route running for Aaron Jones, but from watching him at UTEP what he could do catching the ball rivaled David Johnson. He made some of the same insane level types of winning the ball in the air types of catches that you don't normally see from a running back, especially at the range of the field in which he had been targeted. And I don't think we've seen the best of Aaron Jones as a receiver by any stretch of the imagination while he's been in Green Bay. But you could see how, you know, for me, I look at this and I see three possibilities. You could see Aaron Jones being the lead back like Devonta Freeman had been, and then they maybe, and then it's going to come down to Dexter Williams and Jamal Williams in terms of who's going to be that counterpoint player. And I think that Dexter Williams probably fits the outside zone scheme better because he is quicker to the crease and quicker through it than Jamal Williams has been, but he's not nearly as rugged of a player as Williams is. And his pass protection, you know, I think Williams is the best pass protector on the team from the backfield and maybe one of the best in the NFL. But I haven't looked at that to say, you know, definitively in terms of scoring it, but I know that he is one of the better pass protecting running backs available, and he catches the ball well. So I could see this being a three-headed committee to an extent where Jones is by far the lead guy, but the two Williams backs split some time. Or I could see it being a situation where Aaron Jones gets like an expanded Tevin Coleman role and Jamal Williams gets kind of a lesser Devonta Freeman type of role, unless he can't beat out Dexter Williams, who again is quicker, lighter on his feet, and someone who can hit creases pretty well, and you know, and be able to maybe offer a little bit more in the style of what they're looking for from their running backs. So, what are you looking at with these backs?
Man, you hit on a ton of really, I think, important points there, and you know, so I'll try to add a little bit of context to it, you know, based on some of the data that I've been researching. So Aaron Jones, let's just start with Aaron Jones, you know, as the runner. You know, one of the big things that I look for, Matt, you know, in running backs is their ability to, and not just me, a lot of people do this, the ability to, you know, consistently break, you know, plays of over 12 to 15 yards. You don't want to weight it too much just to yards. And we've talked about this on the last episodes because, you know, each year to year, depending on where you break those carries, you could really inflate, you know, like Saquon Barkley, for example, was great last year, but 55% of his yards came on plays over 15.
Yeah.
So that number could easily drop to 30% this year and he would still be good. That would still be really good. But, you know, to get over 50% of your yards on those kind of plays, it's big. Now, the good thing, you know, I'm not dumping on Barkley because his percentage of plays that he breaks like that per carry is up in the 10% range. Well, guess who else is? Aaron Jones. Now, you have to take it is I'm always careful when it's a limited sample. So last year, you know, he had 133 carries and he was at 6%. The year before, he had 81 carries and he was at 10%. But those are still very, very, very good marks. So he's an explosive player. His yards before contact, his yards after contact are all good, despite not having, you know, a very good, you know, offensive line when it comes to run blocking. The other thing that I really like about Aaron Jones's running style is, you know, he's much more of a north-south runner than I expected him to be when I went back and watched him. And next-gen stats also hold this up. You know, he's right at like, you know, they have a stat known as the efficiency stat. And what it basically tells you is how many yards a player travels per yard gained. And his is at a 3.45, which is that's a very solid number. When you see backs start getting up to 4, 4.5, 5, you know, a lot of times, you know, those backs are not doing as well. Now there are occasions where, you know, for example, you and I've talked before, you could be in an outside zone scheme and you're going to expect that number to be a little bit higher, but overall he's an efficient running back, which I like. I think the big question comes back to what you were just mentioning about pass protection. Last year's coaching staff, they valued Aaron Jones as a runner. In fact, if you look at, you know, a percentage of rushes, you know, he had 35% of the attempts and Jamal Williams had 32%. And so those are snaps on the field when the team was running the ball. If you look at Aaron Jones, though, in passing attempts, his snap percentage versus Jamal Williams, he's at a 34%. Jamal Williams is almost at a 50%. Now, you had a period where you had Ty Montgomery and some other guys rotating through. So it was clear to me that in passing situations, the previous coaching staff did prefer Jamal Williams, and he really is good in that area. Now, there are other ways to compensate for that. We just talked about what this offense is going to look like. I would expect less shotgun, you know, from this team. which means a lot more play action, or, you know, different types of looks that include the back quickly sneaking out into the flat and being, you know, a second or third read instead of just your check down read. I think something like that could help Aaron Jones, because then they're accounting for an extra rusher or something else like that with a position outside of running back. And I think you've seen LaFleur do that in the past. He did that more last year with Deion Lewis. Now, when he had Derrick Henry in the game, he would keep Derrick Henry in to block. But when he had Deion Lewis in the game, it's something where Deion Lewis was, you know, being used in different ways to account for a blitz and more like a hot read. So I think that that's something that could potentially play out well for Aaron Jones. So I'm excited to see what happens, you know, with that. But the last component is Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers does not like to throw underneath to check the ball down. I went back last week because I was preparing to talk about Green Bay, you know, with Matt Williamson on the Locked On NFL podcast. And I watched five games. And Aaron Rodgers, literally, I mean, there would be a running back sitting in the flat, just open, open, open. And it's not like it's third and 18. This is second and six. And he's sitting there going, Aaron, Aaron, Aaron. And Rodgers is just manipulating the pocket like he does incredibly well, buying time, you know, didn't just kind of slide into his left. What's he doing? He's looking downfield. He's waiting on Devontae Adams to uncover on the crosser or whoever else. So the other concern I have there, you know, is if they start to do things like that with the runner, Rodgers has got to buy into that kind of scheme. He can't, if they're going to run plays like that, he can't always be looking for the big shot, which I thought, honestly, when I watched those games, now it was just five games. There were situations where he was doing that too much. They were ahead in a game. It's a manageable down and distance, and he just continues to be so stubborn to want to hit the big play. Hitting the big play is super important. It really is. It will win you football games, but you got to be able to reel that in. And I think in this offense, there are some ways that they could utilize Aaron Jones to help take pressure off of Rodgers that don't include Aaron Jones having to stay in to block. But I think, you know, as far as like fantasy owners are concerned, this is a huge question. Because Aaron Jones is going in the third and fourth round of draft. So if you're looking at playing fantasy football, that's a decent pick you have to invest into a guy that I love his upside. I love his ability as a pass catcher. I love his explosiveness, but I'm not fully settled into how is all of this going to come together when you think about all the moving parts. Is he enough for me to probably, you know, still target in rounds like that? I will, you know, I draft a ton of teams, so I'm going to own some of him. But I don't know about you, but when I think about those pieces together, I still have a little bit of reservation. And it's not about the player. It's just about everything having to come together.
I agree. And I think those are excellent points. And I love how you brought up about Rodgers refusing to really look, you know, check down. And then here's the other element of this. And maybe, you know, you don't predict injury. I'm not a big fan of predicting injury unless you just see a guy who hasn't proven he's been able to stay healthy. But one of the issues that Rodgers has had, at least in two seasons, is his inability to maintain his hamstrings. And he's had hamstring pulls or certain leg pulls that cause him to not be able to move as well as you would like to see. So I wonder what happens if he pulls a hammy and they're like, we can't have you drop from center as well as we'd like you to do. We're going to have to play more from shotgun. If we do that, does that abandon a lot of what they want to do in LaFleur's scheme? That's one question that's interesting to me. The other is then, you know, just how I projected these players. I mean, Aaron Jones to me would be the logical choice of the guy that I would want to split away from the formation, let him run deeper downfield up the seam and some of those Tevin Coleman-like plays that you saw Kyle Shanahan use. And maybe LaFleur would adapt that a little bit more to a guy like Jones. Whereas Williams is the guy that I'd rather have in the backfield, you know, on those plays. And maybe you have two backs in the backfield and split one outside, but then that also means you're only going to have three receivers. You're probably going to do two backs. If you're going to do two backs and three receivers, you don't have a tight end.
No, and that means Jimmy Graham's off the field and they've got to have their blocking tight end in because Jimmy doesn't do that.
Right. Or you put Jimmy in the slot, and then that means Geronimo Allison is probably off the field, and he's not the slot receiver anymore, because if they're playing it the way they have right now, it's going to be Valdez-Scantlin and Adams as the first two receivers. So there's a lot of you know, personnel considerations in that, especially if you aren't happy about the offensive line and you feel like Jamal Williams gives you that added element as a pass protector that will keep Aaron Rodgers upright, and or at least keep him in good stead to be able to buy time a little bit more efficiently. So I do wonder about that too. And when I look at the projections for that, what I have right now for the running back, it's a work in progress because of that. Because I have like Aaron Jones at 35 catches and Jamal Williams at 27 catches. Both are in like Rodgers is at about, or excuse me, Jones is at about 275 yards. Williams is at 210 yards. They only have one touchdown total between them. And then I've given Dexter Williams about 169 yards, 15 catches, which is a high yards per catch average, but it's almost an even split. Well, not even split, but it's like there's a fairly good balance of distribution, but it's a low volume and low total of yardage for running backs in this, especially in a scheme that says one thing, but Aaron Rodgers, as you pointed out, does another. So I'd like to know what do you have for backs in this particular scheme at this point?
Yeah, so I have to, you know, just real quick, we'll take one step back. Right now I've got the team at a 55-45 pass to run. 975 okay. plays. Now, part of that is so, and I'm with you, I struggle with this because if it's Aaron Rodgers running the show, that could be 60-40. You know, if they meet somewhere in the middle, it could be more like 57-43. I'm not, you know, 100% for sure. Most of what I base it off of is, you know, Vegas has got him at 9 wins. So I attribute that to they're going to be leading probably more than they were in the previous season. So I just landed right at the 55-45. But that could, to your point, be very, that could be slightly off. Now, when I got to the running backs, I was a little more bullish on Aaron Jones than you. But, you know, looking at the way that this offense historically, you know, splits it up, and I thought you actually gave a great example. One of the teams that I really went back and looked at was, you know, the way that, you know, Kyle Shanahan ran the Falcons. And when he had Devonta Freeman as well as Tevin Coleman. And right now I have Aaron Jones more in the Freeman role. So I think you're looking at 50 to 55% of the carries. I think he's going to be very explosive on those carries based on the way they're going to use him and the way that fits his skill set. So I've got him at 4.75 yards per carry. And that's 1,145 yards. And then I've got him at 60% of the touchdowns. So that's 9 touchdowns. I feel pretty good about those numbers. Where I'm definitely a work in progress, like you were talking about, is I do not know what to do with the receiving for the backs. Right now, yeah. I've got Aaron Jones at 10%. But if you were to tell me, nope, it's going to be 6, I could go there. If you told me it was going to be 12, I could see that too. It's one of those that's, you know, I'm definitely going to be very tuned into, you know, as training camp picks up. Just, you know, and sometimes it can be tough to pick things up from that, but I'm going to be very interested. I think the biggest thing I'm going to look for, Matt, is in the preseason on like 3rd and 8, you know, on the drives where the starters are playing, is Jones in there? Are they trusting him to block? One. Number two, if they're not trusting him to block, is he in there and has the scheme potentially changed some to where they're going to use him more as a hot route on that in that kind of situation versus asking him to block? If I see those things, I think we could easily feel comfortable about anywhere between 8 and 12%. If we don't see those things, I think, you know, you're looking at his target share being more around a 6. So this is one that'll definitely get refined to your point as we go. But right now I've got it at a 12. So, and sitting here, even just talking through this now, and this is the beauty of doing this. I'm a little bit hesitant on it, and that would put him at, and 48, I have him at 64 targets, 48 catches, 385 yards receiving, you know, plus the 1,150 yards rushing. And then I've got 1.5 touchdowns. So I've got him, you know, it's pretty healthy. I've got him at, you know, total almost 1,500 yards and 10 touchdowns. I think that's easily doable, you know, if he gets the volume, but that's probably a little bit more on the upside of a projection if I'm being completely honest with myself.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I've got Aaron Jones at about 177 attempts and 972 yards. And this is a working number because I don't anticipate him having close to a 5.5 yards per carry average. It's possible, but I would not project that. I'm not going to project that long term. Yeah, it's going to go. I'm going to put him probably in, closer to where you have him in terms of yards per attempt. But what's funny is I have Jamal Williams below, well below 4 yards per attempt. So it kind of evens out.
Yeah, I've got Jamal Williams at 4, but, so I'm with you.
I've got him at 3.8. So, okay. But I've got Aaron and Jones also have it at 11 touchdowns rushing, and then at about 50 targets. And that gives him at about 7, you know, it's about 7 to somewhere in 7 to 7.5 range of percentile of targets I've got here. 35 catches, 275 yards, and a touchdown. And he's the leader in all of those categories. And they're not, you know, those are good totals, but they're not like worthy of what his ability would show you on film, I think.
Mm-hmm. Something broke his way, and I don't mean that, that's not a play on words. I guess if Jamal Williams broke, that would be one thing, or Dexter Williams, you know, can't live up, you know, to being able to fill in. If for some reason Aaron Jones got 65% of the carries and then got, say, 12 to 15% of the targets, oh man, like if he gets that, he could finish in the top 6 running backs, you know, from a standpoint of production. Yes.
And then it's funny too, because you could look at it the opposite. And if Aaron Rodgers does go along with the program, and Aaron Jones has another one of those injuries early in, because he's been the more banged up player, if he's injured and then it's Jamal Williams, then the question is Jamal Williams good enough to carry the load? And my answer would be that the answer to that question is they don't think so, because they got Dexter Williams at a pretty nice bargain a little bit later, and they just cut Capri Bibbs. So the fact that they cut Bibbs is a pretty good receiver and kind of a decent guy to have on your squad. That tells me that they're feeling confident about what Dexter and Jamal have to offer. But I could see it being a Dexter-Jamal split, where Dexter gets a little bit more of the Jones looks, and then Jamal ends up having the role that he had in the past. So I could see Jamal being more of the red zone guy, being more the 5-minute drill guy, also the person who closes out games for them a little bit more, because as teams get tired, defenses do get tired and worn down, and Williams is the type of back who will grind out.
He'll keep them carries.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think one of the keys to Aaron Jones, like for me, is you need to nail what you think his floor is. The upside is huge. So I think that's a known and everybody agrees. I think if people are trying to determine how accurate their projection is on Aaron Jones, it's all about where you put his floor, you know? So just real quick, where do you see that? What'd you say? What percentage of carries did you say you have him at like 45% or something? I think you said,
let me
go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, it is probably 45 to 50% somewhere in that range.
Okay. And I think that's probably a safe floor for him. If we set injury aside, knowing that we're not experts, we're not, you know, doctors, and we can't predict that as well. You know, even if I, you know, in the model, you know, that I have, you put him at 45%, and then let's say you cut his touchdowns. Honestly, I don't see how he gets less than half of the touchdowns, you know, rushing for the team. Yeah. And let's say, you know, you put him in that point, you know, in that 8% range for targets. I feel like his floor is still, you know, right around, and this might be more in the range of where you've got in total. I think the floor for him is still like 1,100 to 1,200 yards and eight to 10 touchdowns. And that's still solid. To know that you have an upside that could be another 30% on top of that because of how efficient he is and the type of running game he's now going to get to play in, it's light years ahead of what he played in last year. Green Bay's running scheme sucked. No offense. It sucked. It's landing. It's literally when you line up in the shotgun in the same way every time, you know, I mean, getting to play from under center matters, you know, for running backs, especially, you know, when you get to play in a scheme like this.
Yeah. So let's move on to the receivers then, because I think we've kind of played that out, what we think in terms of the running backs. You know, we know Davante Adams was a world beater last year. That should continue because Rodgers trusts him implicitly now, and he is the best receiver on the team and one of the best receivers in the league. So I think there's a real possibility that he could sustain, if not even build, on some of his production in this offense, especially if you like the idea of players who now have gotten a secondary option who has grown into that role and becomes a threat on their own, that now the opposing defense has to pay more attention to that player in certain schemes and looks where they know that he's a threat to score or make a big play off of them. And I think that player now is Marcus Valdes-Scantling. I think that Scantling showed enough last year that I think he is a clear head above the trio that includes him, Equanimeous St. Brown, and Jamon Moore. And so, you know, the thing with Scantling is that you're looking at a guy who has 4.3-ish speed in you know, a 6.3 frame, and he still looks like he could add some muscle. So it'll be interesting to see if he's gotten a little bigger and stronger. And he's had an excellent preseason. The whole Ty Dunn expose features report article, which maybe a lot of that was true. The point is that you have to understand that a lot of that information may have been true, but like any operations environment where there's high pressure and there's, you know, there's encouragement of communication that can be less refined, that you're going to have people yelling at each other and throwing things at each other and getting ticked off and maybe even, you know, pushing each other around and saying bad things and throwing each other under the bus. And then they talk it out, hash it out, everything's cool, and you get back to work, because that's just part of the way it is. In the same way that Peyton Manning used to rip Demaryius Thomas up one way down the other in practice for running the wrong route early on in their career, and that he did the same stuff to Cody Latimer, and Latimer just kind of wilted, whereas Demaryius Thomas turned into one of the better route runners in the league for a time and became an elite wide receiver. And I think that Marcus Valdes-Scantling isn't a guy that Aaron Rodgers is going to go, well, I'm going to play mean girls with you, and I'm going to just exclude you from any type of work. You know, it's just like, yeah, all right, I said what I needed to say. I called it the way I needed to see it. It's over. Let's get to work now. What, your feelings were hurt over that? Yeah. Come on. This is football. Yeah,
for me,
this
isn't, you know, it's a news flash, right? Think back to 3 or 4 years ago. Aaron Rodgers was doing the same thing to Devontae Adams. Remember the year? Right. It was 3 or 4 years ago. Everyone was so high on Devontae Adams in fantasy circles. He was like a third or a fourth round pick because everybody was projecting this young guy coming on. There's going to be targets available, and he tanked.
Yeah.
And Aaron Rodgers was on him the whole season. But look what happened late that season. Adams started coming on. The next year, he became the number one receiver for the team. So it's a growth process, you know, and these people, to your point, I always love the fact that you point out that these people are still human beings. They're young. You know, they're being asked to do things in pressure packed situations that, you know, most people listening to this podcast or talking on it, the two of us, we were never asked to do the things these guys are being asked to do at the age they're being asked to do it. Right. So I think you got to give, you know, they're learning on the fly. I don't put a lot of value into those, you know, and it's not that those articles, you know, aren't fun to read, but I don't put a ton of weight into that kind of stuff, to be honest. You know, I don't think we can possibly know the mental makeup of some of these guys just from a few pieces.
They probably have more pressure from home and their home life and their, you know, some of these guys than most of the people who are commenting about this.
Having their whole job.
In their whole jobs as grown ass men.
Exactly. So, yeah. Yeah. You try handling that much money and all that responsibility with your whole family, you know, needing your help, all of your buddies, you know, and then you're trying to work through relationships and all that kind of stuff. I totally agree. So for me, you know, on the football side of things, I want to just take a step back real quick. I want to get your thoughts. The one thing that's most interesting to me is last year when Marquise Valdes-Scantling operated the best was when they didn't have a slot receiver. And so when Randall Cobb was out and Geronimo Allison were both gone, he got to work out of that slot position. And he did really well with Aaron Rodgers there. However, when he moved outside, he struggled more. And so this year, they're, like you said, he's going to be lining. He'll get moved around, but he'll be outside more than he's going to be in the slot. You know, and they're talking about him, that the bigger components I was taking away from some of the OTA minicamp stuff is how often he's working vertically down the field. So I kind of want to stop there, you know, and just get your take, because Devontae Adams is more the intermediate guy. He's going to work in that 8 to 12 yard range on crossers in breaking route. Not that he can't go deep, but he's great at separation. He's going to be the first read on a lot of plays, but I'm interested in getting your thoughts on how well do you think Valdes-Scantling can handle that kind of a role? being outside against better corners, being asked to push the field vertically and create separation, you know, and those type of routes that are often, you know, a little bit different than the stuff that Davante Adams is going to be doing, or the slot, like what Valdes-Scantling got to do last year.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'd say that the hope is that he adds a little bit more strength and he develops a little bit more savvy at the line of scrimmage, because my whole projection for him is he was that guy that could either be the TO type of player who gets the ball early on slants and crossers, and then you have a heck of a time trying to catch him. But if he could grow a little bit more in strength, he's also going to be the way that TO was later in his career, which is he's hard to press, and then he gets separation on you early and wins those deep routes. And the thing is, Valdes-Scantling does a great job of tracking the ball in the air. Even at South Florida, when he was a bit of a raw prospect, the one thing he did extremely well was track the ball on vertical targets. And I think that that's why they're probably counting on him as that deep receiver, because of the fact that, one, he may also get some opportunities deep the scheme will help, because of you're doing outside zone, you're doing these long play action fakes where you're stretching the defense out to a side, and then you're having Rodgers whirl around, and Scantling can pose as a blocker and use his hands a little bit more, not so much in like, you know, you're pressing me because you know it's going to be pass, as in more you're on top of me and trying to see if you're going to need to shed me to block to come off and maintain the gap integrity of the outside, and I can throw you aside because you're leaning that way anyway, and then I can get open in those types of plays. So I think that this helps him. Even the scheme mitigates how much he needs to be good at releasing from press right away. I mean, he's still going to have to do it, but there's going to be some plays that they're going to come off of these play action looks that are going to go deep because of the believability of selling the run, and that's going to get him downfield. I also think that he is, you know, Jake Kumerow is a guy we can talk about a little bit later, who also I think is very skilled at being able to win downfield, and he could pose as an option who could also fulfill that role if needed, or even if Scantling struggles a little bit and Kumerow has a better, you know, preseason, that could very well happen because Rodgers has been very favorable about him as well. But he's had good things to say about both those guys. And I think Scantling has shown, obviously, if they're putting him at the number two, that he's worked enough to continue to grow as a player. And a lot of the issues they had was Scantling was in that bad situation of, do I listen to my boss or do I listen to my boss's boss? Yeah. And they're both arguing with each other right now. And just an added point to that, I mean, I joke around about this a lot, but it's like, you know, I remember when I was 22, 23, I was working in a restaurant. And when I had, you know, my manager yelling at me, he was saying things like, I'm going to fire you if you can't get this table to, you know, accept a free dessert rather than us wanting to cop the whole bill because, you know, we were understaffed and I'm having you take on, you know, nine tables at a time when you should only be taking on 3 to 4. And, you know, and we had and people missing in the kitchen. And I know that I'm doing the best I can. He's doing the best he can. And I know that when he decided to throw the wok across the room and hit a wall and it ring through the kitchen, that, you know, while that was unprofessional and while everybody in the, you know, out in front was probably like the people who noticed it, you know, we're probably like, wow, what happened there? And everybody in the kitchen kind of froze for a minute. I didn't think I was really getting fired. And and while it, you know, it was a stressful situation, at the end of the shift, he's like, you want to grab a beer? And I'm like, yeah, let's do that. And we just acted like nothing really happened other than just going, that was a rough day. And I'm like, yeah, it was. And it was a lesson to me to understand that in certain environments, you have to understand that certain environments are higher stress than others, and that you're going to have behavior that might look dramatic on Gordon Ramsay's kitchen, you know, shows, and people go, that, you know, that just wouldn't fly. That's just not professional. And you're thinking, well, you know, you're an accountant. That's not going to happen in your firm. I understand that, but it's going to happen in the kitchen.
It might happen in the firm. You don't know.
That's true.
I've seen people get doors? Excited yes. about some numbers. well, the yeah. one guy so, we haven't talked about yet is Geronimo Allison. The one thing I want to say about, you know, Allison, is if you go back and you look at all the games, you know, if you look at Davante Adams and you run his splits with the time that different players were, you know, on the field, Geronimo Allison is the only guy that actually was getting enough targets that it brought Davante Adams' target share down. So in the games Allison played, okay, Davante Adams was around a 25%. In the games without Allison, Davante Adams was up more towards a 30%. So just from a trust factor, there's something going on there with Aaron Rodgers. For me, the fact that he's going to play the slot is a good thing. Remember, this is an offense that if you look at the way, think of McVay, think of, you know, Kyle Shanahan when he had three receivers in Atlanta. You know, think of, you know, the roots, even back thinking of, you know, a guy like John Gruden, how much 11, there's going to be a ton of 11 personnel. So a starting slot receiver in this offense is essentially a player that's going to play almost a full complement of snaps. They're going to see somewhere between 80 and 90% of the snaps in a game. So for all intents and purposes, for me, I'll take the upside of having better matchups on the inside and give up 20% of the snaps. Because when you look at the stat that's going to matter the most for receiving, if you're going to look at routes ran per time, you know, that Aaron Rodgers drops back to pass, I'll guarantee you that Allison's going to be almost even with the other two guys. So for me, there's something going on there. I like both players. I like Valdez-Scantling. I also like Geronimo Allison. If there are fantasy players listening, it's not a terrible strategy just to grab Geronimo Allison in the 10th or the 11th, and then you can have Marquise Valdez-Scantling in the 12th or the 13th right now. You know, I could be on board with doing something like that and then just seeing what shakes out. You know, it may be something where it's literally – this is an offense where it's – Davante Adams is going to be the lead target by far. I got Davante Adams at 27% of the targets. That's about as high as I rate someone these days. 27 to 28% is tops. That's elite, elite, elite. There's only five guys I have ranked in that range. He's one of them. And then if you look at a guy like
– I'm at 26.
Yeah, so you're right there with where I'm at. And then what I see is there's going to be different games where different guys step up. I've got Allison right now at 15%. I've got Jimmy Graham at almost 15%. I think people are underestimating Jimmy Graham. This is an offense actually that I think will utilize him much, much more, because there's more now. If Aaron Rodgers buys in, there's more structure in this offense that create separation, not just through physical talent. They create separation much more often through play design. Where Mike McCarthy's system had gotten to, and honestly, part of it may be he trusted Aaron Rodgers too much for too long. It was really just more of an execution offense. There was not a lot of creativity when it came to scheming people open or creating a lot of different mismatches through motion or multiple motions or shifts and things like that. It just wasn't a strong suit of the offense. So now you're going to get a guy like Jimmy Graham who, yeah, he's I'm not even going to say one step slower. He's two steps slower, but he's a savvy veteran. He knows how to work zones. He's crafty enough to know how to get open against man. And now he's going to be in a scheme where also, and this is part of what Rodgers is pushing back on, it's going to be much more likely that he's meant to be the first or second read on many more plays than what he was in the past. Last year, when I was watching the games I was watching, Jimmy Graham was pretty much an afterthought. He's the guy that Rodgers looked at on the third or fourth read, and that's just not Graham's game at this point in his career. He's not a guy you just want to be chunking it up to. Let him use his veteran savvy. Let him work the underneath sit-down routes. Let him run the option route between the sit-down and the seam. He can still do those things, and he's got the size to do it. So I think Jimmy Graham is a guy that I think people are just totally writing off, and I've got it 15%. I've got Marquise Valdez-Scantling right at 14%. So you can see the way I'm kind of thinking about this offense today, and it could change. You know, I've got Davante Adams at 27%, 15% for Jimmy Graham, 15% for Allison, and then 14% for Valdez-Scantling.
Yeah, and I had that 26% for Adams. I've got about 14% for Allison, probably 13% for Graham, and about 10.5-11% for Valdez-Scantling. Whereas Valdez-Scantling is going to be the leader in yards per reception, I have him at a healthy 15 yards per catch.
Agreed. I have him same spot.
Okay. And I have him about 64 catches. He's going to get more catches than Allison off of fewer targets, which is probably a little too aggressive from my standpoint. I will probably balance it out a little bit here, and I might even heighten his yards per catch average doing that. But part of it is I've kind of cut off Valdez Scantling's upside and Allison's upside in favor of Jake Kumerow seeing a little bit more time this year. So because I have Kumerow at about 35 targets, 26 catches, 330 yards for about, 12.7 yards per catch and a few touchdowns. But if he doesn't become much of a factor, then that's going to get diverted out between two to three players or one to three players, really. And that could be either Allison Scantling or Graham, I would say, because I have Adams at, 180 targets, 118 catches, 1478 in terms of yardage, 14 touchdowns. I mean, I have a huge campaign for him this year. Whereas like Valdez Scantling, I have at 6 touchdowns, 969 yards, Allison at 700 yards and 3 touchdowns. And then Kumerow's the guy with 330 yards and 3 touchdowns. And Graham, I'm with you. I have him at 91 targets, 636 yards, 55 catches. The touchdown rate's lower though. And I'm probably going to change that now, because there's, as much as I like Jake Sternberger, and we could see Jake Sternberger getting some opportunities, and I also did this early and I haven't changed it, but I don't think, as much as I like Robert Tonyan as an intriguing guy, I did some of these projections before the draft as well. So I'm going to end up, I have like 4 touchdowns for Tonyan, and I have no idea why I haven't listed as that. So
it's okay.
We'll probably,
hey, stuff, like that, actually stuff change. Like that happens. What did you have Valdez Scantling at for touchdowns? I missed that.
6.
Okay, that's what. So my line for Scantling, I've got 75 targets. I've got him at a lower catch rate because I anticipate him working downfield more, just like you said. I've got him at the 15 yards per catch. Allison's catch rate I have at 65%. Valdez Scantling I have at 55, and that's the nature of where they're going to be getting targeted. Allison will often be, inside the hashes and shorter ranges, which is a higher completion percentage, no matter who your quarterback is. And then for Valdez Scantling, because of the news of him working outside and also deeper, last year he was a 57% catch rate. I've got him, at a 55 right now. I could see putting him at a 57.5, but so that puts him at 41 catches, but 620 yards. But I gave him the second most touchdowns on the team. I've got him at 6. After listening to your comments about what you thought he's capable of doing, I was really excited about seeing what your thoughts were there. But I've got Allison at 5 touchdowns, 680 yards, 50 catches. So it's something where, and those aren't terrible. When you think about it, what Geronimo Allison and what Marquise Valdez-Scantling are going to put up realistically are pretty close to what Mike Williams is going to put up for the Chargers. These are diverse offenses that have a lot of weapons. But if you're a fantasy player, you're getting these guys in rounds 9, 10, 11, 12, whereas Mike Williams is going to cost you a 6. Now Mike Williams, is a guy that, I love, but is he going to continue to catch 10 touchdowns with, someone like Hunter Henry back in the fold, who's also another good red zone option? So when people hear this, from an NFL perspective, they probably love it. Some fantasy owners are probably thinking, oh man, 700 yards. And don't get me wrong, it's not something that you want to be, depending on, but the way I look at those players is if something goes wrong with one or the other, and now all of a sudden more targets funnel towards, just one of them, that's something that, is baked in upside.
Yeah. So and I just switched for myself. I switched flip-flop receptions for Allison and Marcus Valdez-Scantling to work with. It does put Valdez-Scantling at a 16.7 yards per catch, which is a little high for me for him though possible. But it's really comes down to Jake Kumerow, because like I'm projecting Kumerow to get a split, and I'm wondering how much that's going to impact. I'm betting on it impacting Allison, even though I know that Valdez Scantling could be the guy that it impacts more on the surface, because they're both guys who tend to work outside and run those deep routes, and I think that fits. But Kumerow's a bit of a veteran who I think could play a little bit more inside. And Allison has had issues just staying healthy. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of hedged my bets there, thinking maybe Kumerow takes some away from Allison. And so if I'm, I'm kind of looking at, if I were to add back into a player, the majority of the 26 for 330 yards and 3 touchdowns would probably head to Allison and would probably go that way for him. And maybe a smaller percentage would go to Scantling. I decided to give Jimmy Graham 5 touchdowns and Tanyan won. I think that's a little more realistic.
Allison Pace, just real quick, like, so when he was healthy, Matt, 64 catches, 970 yards, and 6 touchdowns. That's what he was on pace for last year. So, it's more than what people remember. And like I said, he's the only guy on the team that actually made Aaron Rodgers look in a place other than Devontae Adams.
Yeah. So that's those are great points. And it just gives you, I think it's a great analysis in terms of not to forget about Geronimo Allison and understand what his place was last year. And, you know, to me, I think it comes down to that you have to have a healthy baseline for Allison, because even if you project improvement for Marquez Valdes-Scantling becoming a guy that Rodgers is like, yeah, we can lean on him, that just gives them three guys he can lean on, as opposed to two, you know, in terms of Adams and Allison. And then, of course, you know, we've got Graham and what he has to offer. But, you know, final numbers for Rodgers, and we'll move on to the Colts here. What do you have for Rodgers?
Yeah, for Rodgers right now, let's see. I have got him at 8 yards. I always start with the efficiency stuff because this is how I build out. You know, I build out stats based on, you know, projected volume times the efficiency. So yards per attempt, I've got it 8. Then his touchdowns per attempt, I've got it a touchdown on 6%. You know, so that's his touchdown per pass rate. And so that puts him at 536 attempts, 65% completion rate. So that's 350 completions, 4,290 yards passing. And then I've got him at 32 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, 250 rushing yards, and 2 rushing touchdowns. So,
okay.
So healthy numbers. Aaron, what I am concerned about, you know, with Rodgers is there is a little bit of a health concern, like you said. I hope he buys in enough into the scheme that they can meet into the middle, because where it's going to help him, it's not necessarily just going to be in volume passing, but his efficiency has a chance to really shoot up. Whenever there are good quarterbacks in this type of scheme, I mean, think of the years that guys like, you know, Matt Ryan have put up in this kind of scheme. Now, I would argue, actually, you could say it's a similar talent set. Pretty much that team was based on Julio Jones, a movable chess piece in Tevin Coleman, and then a guy that was going deep in Gabriel, and a guy more like an Allison working underneath in Mohamed Sanu, and that was a great offense. So if Rodgers will buy in to the extent he needs to, and LaFleur will buy into Rodgers to the extent, and they can work that thing out, I think the efficiency is where there's actually – it wouldn't surprise me if Rodgers all of a sudden was at 8.5 yards per attempt and his touchdowns popped up to like 6.5%. Then you're talking about a huge season.
Yeah, I have him higher than you, but it's more for the reasons that I think that Aaron Rodgers is going to treat Matt LaFleur the way Cersei Lannister treated Tyrion Lannister in Game of Thrones. Well,
then you have to bring his efficiency down, Matt. You can give him volume.
Yeah, I guess, yes. So, but I have it more in a sense of, seeing, I want it both ways. So I kind of have him at 8.13 yards per attempt. I have him at about 5% of touchdowns per attempt. So that comes out and at 67% completion percentage. So I have him at about 685 attempts. And I just don't trust the running backs right now. I just don't trust the line. I don't trust the running backs. I'm wondering how well this is going to play out. So I look at it as kind of like you see flashes of it, but maybe they realize that they need to address some things that aren't the fault of the running backs or the fault of Aaron Rodgers. So I have him at about 685 attempts, 462 completions, 5,571 yards, 36 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, about 43 rushes, 269 rushing yards, and 2 touchdowns. So I have a strong season, like top 3 season for Aaron Rodgers is a bounce back. Because I think my underlying idea about this, in addition to just doing the projections, was if he was captaining the mess that he was captaining – and still was putting up and was playing at the level that he was statistically, I think that some organization around this and them having some conversations and working it out, it's got to be easier. And we're going to see a return of the guy that was, you know, capable of league MVP type of play.
Yeah. I guess my only argument, you know, my biggest thing when I, you know, hear where you have it, I'm actually the yards per attempt is fine. You know, I don't necessarily disagree with the touchdowns. The 630, how many attempts do you have him at?
685.
Yeah, so you've got him 150, you know, above where I do. So, I mean, in 2015 with LaFleur and with Kyle Shanahan, Matt Ryan did throw 650 times. His efficiency wasn't so hot. 2016, right. they brought that in, 575 passing, you know, passing plays, and actually 537 attempts once you take out sacks. So 537 passing plays versus the year before when you take out sacks, 620. You know, that would be the one place where I would say, you know, the 685 for me is going to be on this, you know, if I'm thinking of a bell curve, I think those are probably often like the 5% likelihood range to be that high, but I could see anything. I could see based on the conversation we've had about those two guys working through their differences. I wouldn't argue strongly if somebody's got, you know, them at 580, 600 attempts. I think once you get over 600, you probably on a downhill slope of likelihood.
Yeah. And I agree. And what's funny is this was post adjustment when I looked at some of the attempts that I had for Aaron Jones. I didn't have the targets right in terms of how I projected. I had fewer targets than actual receptions in my first look. And I was like, oh,
yeah,
I've got to ramp this up.
Think about the thing I think about too, right, is the scheme. What's it about? It's about creating misdirection all the time via plays that essentially look the same. Is it a run or is it a pass? And then I'm just in a different formation, but it's the same kind of action. Is it a run or is it a pass? And to set that up, you have to, as much as I know I'm an analytical person and general analytics hate this, you know, I think you've got to be a little more dedicated to the run. This is not a normal running game. It's an explosive running game. But if you look at the way this type of offense works, play action, 30%, 29%, 27%. What Aaron Rodgers is used to is 20%, 17%, 17%. And that's going to take getting used to. But what he has to realize is that while his passing attempts may go down, his efficiency, if he can get bought in enough, is going to go up. Because guys, again, it's back to guys being more open, more separation, you know, more easy looks. I mean, just that's the beauty of, you know, what the Shanahans do and then what, you know, LaFleur is going to bring.
Yeah, and I think for me, the low-hanging fruit for me to amend my projections is to probably cut off between about 25 to 35 targets from the running backs that I currently have, probably cut down about 15 to 20 targets from the tight end group, and then probably cut down another, you know, 10 to 15 targets off the wide receiver group. And if I do that, that will probably have them in the range of the low 600s, high 500s. And that makes more sense to me as well. This was a fun look at Green Bay.
So that's a wrap for this episode about projecting the Green Bay Packers. I'd like to thank Dwayne McFarland once again for joining us on the RSP cast. You're going to get a chance to hear him again in the coming weeks as we cover much of the rest of the league that we haven't covered already. And you can find his work at MattWaldmanRSP.com as well as footballguys.com. You'll see some work upcoming there. And as of course, you can find him at Context Matters on Twitter. So really good stuff from Dwayne. You should see something coming up from him with Jay Moyer, also a new addition to the RSP site. They're doing a joint project together that should be a lot of fun to look at. And if you enjoyed this podcast, listen, head over to Podbean or Blueberry, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, or iTunes, and give us a review. Rate and review the RSP cast. And, you know, let me know what you think. If you have something that you'd like to share that's a little bit more in depth that you would feel like would be better with an email, by all means, email me at mattwaldmanrsp@gmail.com. And of course, the RSP newsletter came out this past week. If you haven't received your June newsletter yet as an RSP subscriber, please email me at that aforementioned address. There were a few of you who had unsubscribed last year who I think unwittingly did so. So I sent you requests. And if you didn't and you haven't gotten the newsletter, there might be a reason why that we can work out. So thanks again, everyone, for just the awesome feedback, for an awesome season thus far for the 2019 Rookie Scouting Portfolio publication. I love all of you guys for just, you know, the feedback and the suggestions and just the customer loyalty, man. It's just absolutely humbling. So you guys have a great week ahead, and we will see you next week.